Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here. Welcome to the very latest instalment of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, the one and only Kate Winslet lifts the lid on exec producing and starring as a small town detective in a new series, Mayor of Easttown, coming soon to Sky Atlantic. Best-selling author Catty Kay spills the beans on co-writing the highly anticipated follow-up to her book Living the Confidence Code. And acting royalty Charlotte Riley unveils the Wonderworks' newest open letter campaign, Keeping Families in Film, tackling childcare issues within the entertainment industry. All of that and so much more to come. Now, Vassos, tell us, who's our first guest?
Her latest bestseller, Living the Confidence Code, is out now. And you know your book is doing its job when your 17-year-old daughter refuses to return your review copy. Please welcome the coolest of cool Catties. It's Catty Kay.
Good morning, Catty.
Good morning from Washington.
I know.
Well, good night from Washington, actually.
Are you working today on the telly box? Have you got your telly job going on later?
I am.
All right. For people who don't know what you do there, just enlighten them.
So I have a daily news show that I present out of Washington. Here in America, we say I anchor it. In London, I'd be laughed out of town for saying that. So I present it on the BBC with Christian Fraser every evening.
And how's it been news-wise since Joe Biden's presidency got underway? Because, you know, US political news has gone very quiet on this side of the pond since the exit of Donald Trump.
Chrissy, you're saying we're boring you?
No. Nope.
I'm sorry that America is not living up to expectations.
No, but I'm just wondering what, you know.
Look, you're right. It's a lot calmer. I mean, the whole sort of temperature has come down. I used to wake up with sort of slight heart palpitations.
Did you?
to look at what the president had tweeted every morning. And I could feel my blood pressure rise when there was a presidential statement coming out when it was Trump.
Right.
And now things, you're right, it's quieter and calmer. And yeah, perhaps a little bit boring, but maybe that's for the best. Certainly probably better for my heart pressure.
And how is Sleepy Joe doing? Because people said, you know, he's probably got 6 months in him, but that's the plan anyhow.
He is low-key compared to Trump. Perhaps everyone is low-key compared to Trump. But what he's doing on terms of his agenda is actually super activist and big.
Cool. Very cool.
All right, so Changing America.
Let's talk about your book, Living the Confidence Code. This is the companion book, the complementary book, the second book to your original number one New York Times bestselling, The Confidence Code for Girls. How does it complement the first book? Where are we moving on to in this narrative?
So The Confidence Code for Girls came out of work that we have done with neuroscientists and psychologists looking at how we can stop the drop-off in confidence in teenage girls. We found that girls lose their confidence between the ages of 8 and 14. And what we want to do is try and catch them before they get there. And one thing we realize is that girls, well, all of us, we all learn really well from stories. And girls learn really well from other girls. I have a 15-year-old daughter. She does not listen to me, I can tell you. She listens to her friends. So we thought if we could find girls from around the world who had done cool things and could inspire other teenagers, then perhaps that was a good way to help girls not lose their confidence.
Okay, and your book stars 30 amazing girls from around the world. How did you garner the girls from around the world?
Yeah, our publishers came to us and said, could you do a book of 30 girls? We thought, oh my God, this is going to be a reporting nightmare. And actually, of course, we could fill, you know, 5 books with girls from around the world. Turns out we have a generation of teenage girls who are doing awesome things, who are real activists, who some of them doing big things. They are, there's a sisters in Indonesia who have launched a campaign to clear the beaches of plastic. There's Amica George in the UK who launched Free Period. Some of them are well known. There's the Afghan robotics team. And some of them are doing small things. And I love that about the book, that some of it's, there's a girl in California, Taylor Fuentes. She's one of my favorites, who was bullied in school relentlessly for months. And she was getting really sad. And, you know, her grades were suffering in school. And her confidence challenge was to speak up about it, because there's this kind of code of silence around bullying. But she took the risk and she spoke up. So the girls are different. Their stories are different. But they all go through the same process of taking a risk and doing something hard to build their confidence.
And what, you know, is there a pattern that you have sort of put together from this as a playbook that will help them in similar situations where they sort of, they need a bit of support?
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of the girls in the book, the reason we chose these girls is because they're honest about how, you know, it's hard and they do fail and they mess up and they struggle. And that's an important part of the process. We found in our research that you build your confidence by doing hard stuff. I mean, I do my job every day. It doesn't challenge my confidence. If I was to come on the Chris Evans show and try and present that one morning, it would terrify me. The only way I'd know I could do it is by doing it.
You'd be really good at it.
But along the way, you would lose, you know, half your audience the next morning. And I would probably mess up. And that's what we like about these girls, is they're honest about messing up. What we're trying to do for girls, what the reason girls lose their confidence is they become terrified of failing. And failure sits like a kind of big bogeyman on their shoulders. And we are basically trying to normalize failure. You're going to do it. Chris, you've failed. I've failed. Your mum has failed. Your best friend has failed. Your teacher has failed. So we have to accept that failure happens. But if you're so afraid of failure that you're never going to take a risk, you're not going to grow your confidence.
Yeah, confidence is so important, isn't it? It's so difficult to grasp. You know, it's like a spectre sort of seeping out of the room, and you don't know where it's gone. You don't know where it came from. And you when you get it, you think, oh, I've sorted this now. I've nailed it. And then the next day, you're as unconfident as the most unconfident person in Unconfidenceville. Do you agree that the obstacle is the way? Because it seems to be that from the stories. Oh, the way round is the way through.
Yeah, there's a lovely girl in this book called Anahi, and she set up a thrift shop in her school in Texas because she realized that lots of kids didn't have warm clothes when it got to winter. So she wanted to try and help them. And she sets up this thrift shop, and she's kind of nervous about doing it and thinking everyone's going to, you know, think, why am I the person that's doing this? And the first day when the donations are going to come in, not a single donation. And she wants to crawl into her bed and never do it again and thinks, oh, my God, I was just, you know, I was being self-aggrandizing. I was putting myself out there and no one responded. But she kept going. She didn't crawl into her bed, or she might have done for 5 minutes. But then she gets up and says, no, this, I need to do this because these kids need these clothes. I know this is a good idea. And then eventually it works.
When you have a wobble, have you learned anything from the writing of these two books that you can apply to your life, or that the blokes can apply to their lives? Are there any general rules that you can share with us now?
You know, I mean, lots of men have said to us, well, we have confidence falls off too. And one thing that we found that's really useful that actually I've learned from male friends and from my sons who seem to do this like naturally, is that even when you're afraid, do it anyway. We have this phrase, do it afraid, because most risks are a bit scary.
Yeah.
But don't let that stop you from taking action. So do it afraid and don't try and be perfect. You're never going to get there.
Yeah.
It's a waste of time and energy. So give up perfection.
Yeah, no, there's loads of those, isn't there? Do it afraid. I like that. I've not heard that one before. So do it afraid. There's ready, fire, aim. Just get on with it. You know, fire and try and steer the bullet or the arrow to where you want it to go. But you've got to fire it first to get on with it. Never let perfect be the enemy of good.
Yeah.
All those, they're really useful, aren't they? I mean, they're cliches because they're true.
Yeah. And, you know, these girls have lived them. And they're such different girls from all over the world. You know, a girl who got herself out of a child marriage in Ethiopia, that is not a problem most girls in the UK or the US are ever going to have. But the process that she goes through of speaking up and finding her voice and taking a risk to speak up and challenging her dad, it's the same process that all of these girls have gone through.
And who are your partners in crime here? Claire Shipman and Jalelyn Riley?
So Claire and I have written, this is our fifth book together. So we've done a whole series of books on, we started off doing writing books about women. We're writing another one at the moment. And Jalelyn Riley is a wonderful writer who had written books for girls. Because the first time we wrote a book for girls, I gave it to my daughter, Poppy, the first chapter. And Poppy read the book, read the chapter. She came back to me and said, Mum, I don't mean to be mean or anything, but you know no one's going to read this, right? It's really boring. Great confidence boost from your own daughter. You've got to love teenage girls. And so we brought on Jalelyn Riley, who had written books for girls, to help us out.
So your last book was number one in the New York Times best-selling list.
Is this one, by the way.
I was going to say.
This one has hit number one. It's, It came out at number one too. Wow. So we're really pleased.
Thank you, Cathy Kay. Living the Confidence Code. It's great. It's out now. And as you just said exclusively, it is the brand new number one New York Times best-selling book.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Today's guest needs ample shelf space for the props she's taken from her film sets, as well as the countless awards that come with them. Sky Atlantic's Mayor of Easttown hit screens on April the 19th, and here to tell us all about exec producing and starring in the leading role on this Best Songs in the World Ever Winslet, it's the forever fierce queen of the screen, Kate Winslet.
Morning, Kate.
I shouldn't laugh, but that is quite the introduction.
Exactly. Well, Hell's Bells does not disappoint, and I'm glad you weren't disappointed. How are you, Kate? What's going down?
I'm good. I'm very good, Chris. How lovely to talk to you. And I've got to say, on behalf of myself and my family and all of our friends, your positive vibes in the morning on your show has gotten people through. So hats off to you. Thank you. You're amazing.
Give ourselves a cheer. We're always very happy to pat ourselves on the back, just in case nobody else ever does.
Very good.
But Kate, no, thanks so much. Thank you very much indeed. Right, so listen, Mayor of Easttown, she's not a mayor. That's her name. So who is Mayor and where is Easttown?
Okay, so Mare, as you say, M-A-R-E, that's her name. So I play Detective Mare Sheehan, and she is a middle-aged woman. Actually, she's a mother and grandmother who grew up in Easttown, where the show is set, in Delaware County, which is just outside of Philadelphia City in America. And it's a tight-knit community. Everyone knows everyone and knows their personal stories too. And she's a detective. She's seen as a local hero. She made a winning shot in a basketball game as a teenager, put Easttown on the map, and now she's everyone's go-to detective and people lean on her for everything. So she's held up as an important local figure, and underneath the chippy, tough exterior, there's a woman who's burdened by a personal grief, a tragedy that she hasn't and can't confront. And so as the story and the murder story unravels, Mare starts to kind of catastrophically unravel as well. So there you have it.
But she's not she's not broken. Like you say, she's burdened, she's vulnerable, she's fragile, but she's not broken.
Yes, that's right. She's not broken. She's strong, but she has this deep vulnerability inside of her, and is very, very burdened by something that has taken place two years before the story begins. And everyone knows what happened to Mare and knows that she won't and can't talk about it and doesn't dare to bring it up to her either. But it's clearly affecting her every day. It's also about the complexities of family life. It's about community. It's about forgiveness and having the strength and courage to sometimes just keep going.
Yeah.
She was a really wonderful character to play. You know, she's sort of lovable but infuriating at the same time. She could be your best friend, but the thorn in your side. And she ate absolute rubbish as well. This was the thing. I ate so many fake foods on this show. I drank a lot of coffee and a lot of beer. She doesn't drink water actually ever.
Right. And was the beer beer? The beer's never beer, is it?
It was boringly, Chris. It was right. Non-alcoholic beer.
Now, as I say, she isn't broken, but she did break you, didn't she? Because do you read your interviews back? Because the one in the Sunday Times in the culture section on Sunday was fantastic. It was a very profound exchange, obviously. But you cried a lot throughout it, just recalling the depths you went to create Mare.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. I mean, with this character, you know, I always shy away from sort of talking too much about the details of, you know, being an actor and putting things together and putting yourself out there, because sometimes I think it, you know, it can sound quite indulgent. But this character, I mean, she really did get to me, and I'm still sort of trying to kind of get rid of her a little bit. But I was playing her for a very long time, and I was preparing to play her for 6 months. We started filming October 2019 and shut down in March last year, obviously, because of COVID, and went back in October. And I just finished right before Christmas just gone. So I was really playing her for this extended period of time. And, you know, what she has to deal with and take on and go through, and it was a lot for me to carry. And, you know, sometimes it does get in there and can get a little bit stuck. So it's sort of, yeah, it was a tricky one, this, for sure.
Yeah, and you've also described it as potentially a transition moment for you as an actress, haven't you?
Well, it did feel like that a little bit. I think she was just so different to the previous role I played in a film called Ammonite and a lot of other things that I've done. She was just a real departure. And because I was an executive producer on the show, I was very involved in the kind of creative putting together of the project too. You know, I first read it in 2018. And so as the script would
evolve and change over the period of preparing to play her, I was very much included in that and included in the casting of other actors. It was really exciting. And, you know, as you said earlier, like not watching my stuff back, on the whole, I don't really watch myself on screen. I find it really disconcerting. It's so weird. But with this one, I am actually having to, because of the executive producing role. And, you know, obviously a lot of things happen in the edit and I've been included in that process. And
yeah, I was going to say, so what have you learned about that? But because it is a new string to your bow, newish anyway. So what have you learned about being an exec?
You know, I've sort of learned by default along the way. But yeah, I learned a lot more about it on this. My goodness, it was just a massive production, you know, 120-day shoot, which is very, very long, much longer than a film shoot. People often don't think that, you know, a film shoot can be, you know, anything from sort of 9 to 12 weeks, you know, and a TV series can be anything upwards of 20 weeks. I mean, ours was, you know, a lot longer. But yeah, it was a full on, but very, very rewarding experience. And I have to say, I am excited about the show, and I don't tend to sort of publicly say things like that, because again, I think it can sound a little bit, I don't know, un-British or something, but it is a good one.
It's funny, isn't it, that even you feel like you have to apologize for saying some things, but I think you speak the truth as much, if not more, than most other people in this business. And I find you more compelling for that. Do you ever feel fearful in these situations or not?
Well, yeah, you do. You know, it's, I think, you know, talking to you is obviously very exciting, but it's easy to kind of relax chit chatting because you're such an approachable person too. But, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think we want to live now, don't we, in an honest, compassionate and very equal, inclusive world. And the more that we can, I think, just speak the truth and look out for each other and, you know, not hide behind things just because there's, you know, a hierarchy or a Hollywood system or just things that people sometimes don't dare say. I think this is a different time now. I think things have changed so seismically in the last particularly 2 years globally. And I think sort of speaking the truth, really, I think it's important, opening up conversations that maybe people might be too fearful to have. You know, that just means a lot. You know, I think that's me as a parent, that's me as a person, you know, so I sort of can't change how I was raised, Chris.
Oh,
you know?
I love it, Kate. I absolutely love it. One bit from Sunday again. Have you read the interview back, by the way?
Snippets, bits of it.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. There's so much in it. It says here, trust me, says Kate, I don't think I can ever wear high heels again. This is to do with premieres maybe not happening like they used to. This is post-COVID, of course. We'll see more women wearing flat shoes and pantsuits on red carpets. I'm going to put this in for you. Thank God. That's not in there. And that's good. It's quite a lot of pressure wearing a red carpet dress. Don't know, I've never done it. If you've got your period or you ate too much bread the week before, I mean, that's gorgeous. That is so fantastic that you say that.
Chris, I'm telling you, it's true. And I won't say their names, but two extremely famous, high-profile Hollywood women have turned to me on red carpets and said, I think I just got my period. And they had.
Yeah.
And had to leave, go home and change.
Oh, my goodness.
So it happens.
Well, you're awesome. And you've also said you were hired maybe in your younger days as a firecracker and now you're more smouldering. How is the smouldering going?
Oh, Chris, I don't know how to take that. It's going well.
What can I say?
No, I'm 45 years old. I've been doing this job since I was 17.
Good for you.
Somehow the mugs keep inviting me back to join the party. So
wow.
I'm grateful. Grateful. What can I say?
I would say you're halfway. I mean, you're halfway. You're no more than halfway. Does it feel like that?
I don't know. Sometimes I still feel like I'm still getting going. You know, every job
That's
feels
good.
Like my first.
Yeah.
I still get terrified. I still get absolutely terrified before a first job. It's like first day of school, you know, you have to get it out of the way. And you do think, oh, God, everyone's looking at me and they think my accent's rubbish. And, you know, they don't think I can act very well. You know, same. Those anxieties never leave you. But, you know, a bit of fear in life is a good thing, isn't it? It, you know, drives you, keeps you going.
Such a relief that Kate Winslet still gets nervous about acting. And she's won one of the, what are they calling again, those things?
I think you are talking about Oscar.
Yeah, of course
we
are. Yeah. Well, what else could we be talking about? I just have interest.
About our dog, who regularly runs off, golden retriever, often can be found in a nearby village, not at our house. I don't know. So the kids sort of tend to moving around the house. I don't know. I have no idea.
Funny.
But I do still get scared. I know. It's funny, isn't it?
No, it's great. It's such a relief for me. I get nervous every single morning. Every single morning. Thank you, Kate, for your time.
Thanks, Chris.
Have the best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
We have another guest and she's a superstar. Come on, let's get on with
it. Our next guest is an acting supremo who's been in some of the best stuff on your telly. She's now setting up a campaign, keeping families in film to tackle childcare issues on set. She's always smiley. We rate her highly. It's Charlotte Riley.
All right, Charlotte.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well.
Long time no see.
Long time no speak, no see, no anything. But you're back now. It said in the intro, you know, you're setting up this thing. But we talked about this last time you were on, because the last you were on the show, we were at Paul Weller's house, weren't we? Do you remember?
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty epic. That was going in my one-line-a-day diary, for sure. I talked to you about it last time we saw each other. And now it's come to fruition. We launched it last International Women's Day. We worked on it all over summer. This is me and my business partner, Mark Radcliffe, and our brilliant team at Wonderworks. And then we opened our doors in September. So now we've got our first children from the Warner Brothers Leeson lot. Their parents are working there. And we're looking after them from 7 in the morning till 7 at night and making sure that we're keeping families in film. And it's going really well.
Right, now there is an open letter that people in the biz can sign, and you can see it at thewonderworks.co.uk/open-letter. Is it just for people in the film industry to sign, Charlotte?
Well, I don't think so. I think this is something that affects, you know, all industries, particularly now after COVID. You know, so many people are struggling with childcare that it is going to have to be something that, you know, across all sectors, people are going to have to step up and support families with. You know, local authorities are reporting that almost a third of nurseries are closing. It is particularly pertinent to our industry because we lose so many talented people when they become parents. We've got a huge amount of brilliant grassroots support for diversity and inclusion at grassroots and getting people in there in their 20s. But we're not retaining those people when they become parents. And that's really the nub of the problem. You know, people are struggling to crew up. The business is booming here, but we need to keep those talented people in film so that we get the best level of diversity and inclusion across the board. But it is definitely something that is affecting all sectors, particularly after COVID.
All right, now, if you'd like to see this come to life, because it has, go to thewonderworks.co.uk as well to look at this lovely film. You've got this one-minute film that's on there. You know, and because you say in the film, you know, we are film people, and I thought, oh, that's nice. It's nice to be able to say that, because we're radio people, you know, there are circus people, there are medical people, but you've got your own film family. Because this is at Warner Brothers, it's like a super creche, and I don't mean that in a zhuzhy kind of fancy-schmancy kind of way. It's just extremely cool. So did some of the set builders and set designers who work on the movies help you with this sort of this WonderWorks Wonder Crash?
Yeah, well, you know, we've got amazing little kitchens that were designed by a guy called Joe Vitez, who's a props designer.
Lovely.
We've got amazing costumes designed by costume designers. it's wonderful. It really has been a labour of love. All of our furniture is made from old scaffolding boards from sets that are, you know, broken. We repurposed everything. We've got old props in there. You know, I spent my lockdown last summer, as we were allowed to be building over the summer, repurposing old props, painting, sanding everything down, and it's been a real labour of love. But I think that's why this is important, is because we as a film family really understand what film families need, which is total flexibility. And that's why this is important for us, is because it's tricky for film people in the industry to find the kind of childcare that they need elsewhere. And that's why people leave, is because they just can't make it work. And, you know, the industry can't change, and because we need to work long hours, so we need to support those families at the hardest point in their life. You know, we all know, don't we? It's when you become a parent, you're like, oh my gosh, but how do I make this work with my life now? I certainly know I found that. And I think it's supporting parents through that transition to family life and film life.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you say that, and, you know, I'm a parent five times over, and you're two plus a spare. And it's one of the thoughts, just you saying it again, it always makes me shudder. I don't know why. with the thought of, what did we do with our time before we had kids? Because we had so much spare time. It was like, how did we fill it?
I think this all the time. I sometimes cry when people are like, should we just like watch TV all day and eat pizza?
Yeah, I know.
And then I almost shed a tear because I'm like, this is never going to happen for at least 10 years.
I know. Well, no, times that by two. I got two emails last week on the bank holiday weekend. One from a pal of mine saying, do you fancy coming over for garden drinks at 5 o'clock? No, not an option for the next 5, 6, 7, or 8 years. Well, how about 6? No, and he's got 4 kids. But you forget. I said, you remember 5 o'clock tea time, 6 o'clock bath time, 7 o'clock stories, 8 o'clock, I haven't got any energy left for anything in the world. And then another mate said, do you fancy coming for a drive tomorrow morning at 9:30? No, you can't. You don't. What is wrong with you? And he's got loads of kids. And he's like, how quickly you forget. Amelia, you don't have any children yet. You don't have a partner as we speak here.
No.
But you're back in the dating game because COVID's finally being eased off and unlocked and all that kind of stuff. You have all this time on your hands. Are you aware of the fact how free you are?
Yes. I think lockdown has made all non-parents very happy. As in, I think we realise how lucky we are, more so with lockdown and everything. I think it's made us realise that we're very close.
I used to ring my friends and be like, tell me what you're doing. Tell me what's happening during your lockdown, please. I could fantasise.
Vicariously living through your past.
Exactly.
Okay, here's a question for you, right? From one parent to another, okay? We've still got twins under 3. Your youngest is just about to approach 4, I think.
No, 2. Our youngest is 2, yeah.
2, okay, so just about to approach 3. When... Say tea time slipped a little bit. Very rarely does in our house because Tasha's in charge. And then bath time goes awry a bit. And suddenly it's story time and you're a bit late and you're a bit tired. And whatever time is left for you, there's even less of it than usual. Do you skip a few pages in the storybooks hoping the kids won't notice?
Do you know what? The littlest one wouldn't notice. The 5-year-old, he's like, hang on a minute. Yeah. What about the bit where the ship comes in? So I can't get away with it with the 5-year-old. The 2-year-old, he's fine. I can tell him a story out my head and he'll be happy with that.
Yeah, pick up a book, pretend the story's from the book, but it's not.
Yeah.
Amelia, this is all we've got to cling on to. We're making the most of these. These stolen moments from our children.
These milliseconds that you're saving.
Yeah. All right, Charlotte. Well, listen, good luck. Well done. Congratulations.
Thanks, love.
You said you were going to do it and you've done it. So congratulations, Charlotte.
Thank you.
It's fantastic. TheWonderWorks.co.uk/ownpaletter. Go there to have a look at that letter. See if you want to sign it. See if you're qualified. See if it feels right in your tummy. And also to see this lovely little film that Charlotte has made about the first ever WonderWorks creche nursery. Call it what you like, at the Warner Brothers lot here in the UK. Charlotte Riley doing great things for families in film.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
All right, we've already heard from a handful of our colossal guests already, but there's still so much more to come. The superb Sally Lindsay takes us on a turbulent ride in her new Channel 5 crime drama, Intruder. Golfing great Nick Doty joins us ahead of the Masters Golf Tournament, exclusively live on the dedicated Sky Sports The Masters channel. The brilliant Brian Bell, live from California, tells us about the unstoppable Weezer, delving into the group's 14th studio album, OK Human, as well as their upcoming orchestral live stream and hopefully stadium UK and Ireland tour. And superstar Tom O'Dell breaks our hearts with his new single Monster and the story and the video behind it. All of that and more still to come. So let's get right back to the action. Vassos, who is next?
From Corrie to Loose Women to Still Open All Hours, when our next guest is on your telly, it's impossible to turn over. She's now starring in the gripping crime drama Intruder on Channel 5 at 9 p.m. all this week. And it really is impossible to turn over. or think about anything else. Please welcome the superb Sally Lindsay.
Morning, Sally.
Morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm very well. You have an interesting situation on your hands at the moment. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm basically trapped in a hotel room in Malta for 2 weeks. We're on day 4 at the moment, and I'm glad I never did the Big Brother thing because I'm going a bit mad already.
So you're quarantining so you can do a job, is that correct?
Yeah, we're filming out here for the next thing I'm doing, which I've written myself with my writing partner. And that's nothing like Intruder, but it's a little bit different. But, yeah, we're filming out here in Malta for 8 weeks after that. But we have to do 2 weeks quarantine. They're very strict over here. But, you know, it's a beautiful island. We're actually on the island Gozo, so it's like paradise, really. I can see it, but I can't touch it. It's very infuriating.
No, because you're super talented, Sally Lindsay, and also very wily. And, you know, Channel 5 come to you and say, look, we want to give you a little sort of production deal here. How about 3 different shows? And you say, yeah, OK, that's fine. You sign on the dotted line. And the first thing you write on the script is Malta. Or somewhere else. Absolutely gorgeous. Is that,
well, do you know what it was?
Is that how it works? Go on, tell me.
Remember when I came on talking about cold call? When I was filming that, and I was in a caravan, and I seem to have spent most of my career on a caravan parking lot in Manchester. So I just thought, no, next thing I'm writing is in the sunshine.
Okay, I have some information about what you're doing. It's Sally's in Malta. She prepares to shoot the 6-part thriller, The Reluctant Madame Blanc.
It's a thriller comedy as well, so it's not as dark as the rest of the stuff.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because yeah. Comedy thrillers are very hard to get right, and I'm sure yours will be. But, you know, Knives Out, have you seen Knives Out, that movie with Daniel Craig?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's so clever, because it is really funny, but it's still gripping.
So
that's a tough trick to pull off.
The thing is, it wasn't meant to be funny, but because I write it with my friend Sue, and Sue Vincent is really funny, it just sort of happened. It's a little bit funnier than we thought it would be.
Wow.
So it's just come out like that, but it is a thriller, yes.
But this show, Intruder, you can't really go to sleep after this one, because I tried last night and failed miserably. Do you want to pitch it to everyone so they know what we're talking about?
Yeah, so what's happened is there's this very Gigi couple who think they've got everything sort of sorted in their life, they've got great jobs, and they've got this beautiful house down by the coast, and they've got this dinner party, and they all get a bit sort of squiffy and a bit self-important, and 2 young, very, very young lads break in just for, you know, terribly, you know, to rob them. And one of them tries to escape, they get caught, but one of the guy in the house, he stabs him in cold blood in the back. There's no need for him to do it because he was escaping. So therein lies the story. So it's a really interesting drama in the fact that it started with a crime. And then what happens is the unravelling of all the terrible backstory of what's happened between this couple. And then I play this very sort of underrated, she's sort of undercared for little family support officer. Mm. She just comes in to see the family and to see if everybody's all right. She is a police officer, but she's not... you know, she's not active in the case. And she just knows something's not right because they try to cover it up. And because they're posh and because they're rich, everybody sort of believes them. And she knows there's something wrong. And so she just follows them and she just picks the case. And you find out these horrendous things have happened in their past and it's all going on. So the crime is sort of the last... It is brilliant, but it's the last thing, you know, it's the least thing that's horrific, really.
Yeah, I love
it. It just goes on. It's like a roller coaster, like you said.
You're good at this, Sally. You know, it's massively understated. You're being very normal. You know, you're saying, well, hang on a minute. If you bring this down to normal, and the first sort of glimpse we have of that is the conversation you have as a victim's counsellor with the victim's dad, where the dad says something so simple. And you think, oh, hang on a minute, OK. Should we talk about this, or is that a bit of a spoiler, do you think?
I don't know. What do you think? It's so hard, isn't it?
Cause yeah.
She believes the dad.
Yeah.
That's it. She just says, my son would never, ever do this. And she believes him. And I think the thing about the character of Karen Bailey, that is the name of the lady I'm playing, is the fact she's quite dowdy, she's quite, you know, sort of invisible, a woman of a certain age, and people don't feel threatened by her, and they should be. You know, because she goes into these places and she observes and she knows about body language, she knows about people, and she knows who to believe and who not to believe. And I think it's a real statement on that, you know, sort of social workers and family service officers, that literally at the forefront of this grief of families all these times, and they know what's going on. They really do. I mean, when Gareth sort of pitched it to me, I was like, this is a little bit like old, you know, Columbo. Do you remember Columbo?
Yeah, of course.
You know, when he just wouldn't let anything lie.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the female version of that, because he's really normal and he's... That was in my head when I was going to
say,
this is clever.
Now you've called that out. I get it completely. I get that in your performance. But you didn't have the cigar or the raincoat. That's the only two things you were missing.
No, I didn't. I did ask for one.
Yeah. Oh, you know, my wife. Hey, my wife. Take my wife. Come on.
My wife. Then.
Yeah. One more thing. One more thing.
Just completely different. But he just, because he's not impressed by fame or money or anything, he just goes in and literally sees what nobody else sees. And that was, you know, that was a real influence to me. But also an influence was my mum, because my mum was a social worker for 25 years.
Yeah.
And she was a very, very normal, very lovely woman. But she used to go into the most horrific situations.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris, I can't even tell you. And she would know what had gone on within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But she would have to sort of work it out. She knew who needed protecting. She knew who was the instigator. And it was so fascinating when she used to, I mean, she never discussed the cases. She never said names, but we knew the stories. And so that was sort of influenced from that as well, really.
Yeah.
And all these women and men around the country are doing this job every day. That's the fascinating thing. You know, I'm just playing it once, but they're doing it every single day, these amazing people.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it? Because they don't get lost, like your mum. She didn't get lost in the drama. Everybody else was shocked by the drama because they weren't used to it. But because she's used to it, the drama doesn't sort of contaminate her perspective on what's happened.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But when it was anything to do with me and our Chris, and my brother's called Chris as well, so when it was to do with me and our Chris, like, she used to go absolutely mental. But if it was like any of her kids she was looking after, she was the calmest person alive. I was like, why don't we get that?
Yeah, well, because we're emotional beings first and thinking beings second. And because she can park her emotion at home, she can get into other situations, completely suss them. But, you know, we are feeling beings over thinking beings. And we're always feeling first, even though we want to think we're thinking first. But that's just not how it works, is it, Sally?
It isn't. But she was a great influence for this. Her and Columbo.
All right. Well, what a perfect pot to pick from. Sally, good luck with your quarantine. Thanks so much. The show's amazing. Intruder continues tonight and stream on My5. And Sally's always welcome on the show whenever she darn well likes.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Our next guest is a smash hit singer-songwriter, a piano man whose cover of Piano Man on this show, along with The River we just heard, still sends shivers down our virgin spines. His latest single, Monster V.2, is out now. And here to tell us all about it, it's the tip-top terrific Tom O'Dell.
All right, Tom.
Hello. Hello, Bastos. Hello, Chris. Great to hear your voices.
Oh, great to hear you. And well done. Just well done generally. Again, the fourth album. We were sent a sampler last night of the forthcoming album. I know we're not allowed to play anything, but first of all, can I tell you that Lose You Again had me and my wife in tears in bits last night. What a tune. What a tune.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased you love Lose You Again.
Oh, mate. It is a different album from the last three. I mean, you know, they're Tom O'Dell, so they have a Tom O'Dell sound. But you've done something differently this time around. What might that be?
Well, you know, I recorded it, most of it, at the end of my garden. I planned to get the band in, and, you know, was all set up. And then, you know, the pandemic hit and, you know, we're sort of forced to use, well, much less instrumentation and, you know, the instrumentation I could get hold of in my garden, and I've got a little shed at the back of it. But yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm super proud of it. It's a mammoth task. I mean, it's like 16 tracks, this album. I wrote it over 2 years. You know, it's really interesting, just listening down the phone, listening to those two songs and like, they're so good, those two recordings, those live recordings. It's weird doing this job. I don't ever sort of give myself a pat on the back, and I'm not giving myself a sort of narcissistic, like, oh, wasn't that great? But it was just so nice to listen to them, because I was like, hey, we're good. So anyway, I don't know why I'm congratulating myself.
No, but I get it. And it's not dissimilar to when, you know, in my career, when you've done a TV show and you're in the thick of it, and then it's a couple of years later, you realise how much fun you were having and how good a job the team was doing. And because of the pandemic, you know, people who are mid-career, you know, as yourself, you who are in flow, you have this sort of temporary distance, if you like, to make those reflections. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I think it's very healthy. Healthy, Tom.
Yeah, I think it's good. It's weird. I was talking to a mate of mine recently, he's, you know, similar job to mine, and not complaining, but the sad thing about being a musician right now is like all the good bits has been taken away.
Yeah.
All the reasons we got into this was to play live in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And that thrill of doing that, you know, keeps you going. It's the fuel we're all running off. So when, you know, you those early mornings or those radio interviews or that time when, you know, your manager calls you up and says, you know, we didn't get the thing we wanted. It doesn't matter because you're out there with the crowd.
Yeah.
And that's fueling you on, and it's mad, like, that being removed. It becomes a very different job. I feel like more of a sort of businessman at the moment.
Yeah, I get it. You know, the video for, we don't know how to say it, Monster V.2, how do you say it?
It's just Monster. I mean, the song's called Monster.
Right.
The album's called Monsters.
So did you? Is this a result of you asking your fans for how they're feeling at the time? Because I know the video features lots of your fans.
So I wrote this song, right? I get pretty bad anxiety, and I've suffered from anxiety for years. And I wrote this song about trying to overcome these panic attacks.
Right.
I was getting panic attacks. They were getting worse and worse and worse. And it got to a point where I was like, every time I step in a studio, my heart would start racing. And I'd get this panic attack. And you know, it was getting, like, bad. And I wrote this song, Monster, about trying to relearn myself, reteach myself how to live without having them. And, you know, it was about trying to tell myself that this fear I was feeling was irrational. Like, when, you know, this, I'm sure whether you've dealt with panic attacks or I'm sure there's thousands and thousands of people listening that have had them, but everything in your body is telling you to run.
Yeah.
It's just saying, run, run. The fear, it's anguish just flowing through you. And part of the way I was told to try and get over them was to just convince, you have to be rational and tell yourself, this is not real. So this is what this song is. And I actually, you know, without, it sounds like exaggerating over the top, but, you know, like this song was really the song that sort of massively helped me get over them.
Good for you.
So that's where it started. Anyway, then I asked my fans, I said, what does the word monster mean to you? And we got sent in thousands of videos. I put this email address up and we were getting like an email every 10 seconds was like a video of what the word monster meant to them. Incredible. Like snapshot of around the world, like what people's demons are.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be like, I don't know, their some leader, like right wing leader in their country, or whether it be they're dealing with bulimia, or it's how they see themselves in the mirror. They see this monster looking back at them. I mean, we just got every response you can imagine they sent in, and it created this video that was just mental. And you know what, going back to that conversation about having a connection with your audience, it was so exciting and exhilarating for me to have a connection with my audience again through making this video. And you know, I edited it and spent a few days like just going through all this footage, and it was really amazing experience. So even if you hate my music, check it out.
Nobody hates your music, for heaven's sake. You're a genius. And they do say, don't they, a problem shared is a problem halved, but if it's shared by half of the world, then it's close to being annihilated.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's lots of tears, and there's lots of genuine tears, you know, from your fans. And you know, I'm sure they've all given their permission to be on the video, and it's brilliant because as long as you know, when you know other people are feeling the same and you don't, you're not on your own, then it's not job done, but you're pretty much halfway there, I would say, to fixing whatever it is that might be broken.
I couldn't agree more. And I've been super liberated on this album campaign by talking about this stuff that I used to think was indulgent.
Yeah.
I've sort of like had this great liberation actually just saying, talking about how I feel as honestly as possible. Because I've realised that if I can just help one person that is also feeling or suffering from anxiety, then, you know, it's so powerful that. And I'm sort of like, I feel like I've always been honest, and now I've got this public duty to sort of always be honest with everything I do going forward. And I feel like I found a great sort of role in that and a power in that. So I feel good about that.
I love that. And, you know, in your stage performances, and, you know, as a live performer, I've always said this about you, don't listen because you get embarrassed. There's nobody better in the world to watch live than Tom O'Dell. But within that, there's a vulnerability and there's an anguish, you know, and that's why I find you so compelling as a performer, because what happens to you on stage comes from deep within. And there is an absolute truth there. You know, it hasn't been articulated like you're articulating it now, but it was on show and it was evident. So you've always been honest and you've always been truthful, not just perhaps in the English language. And that's why I find you, I think you're amazing, Tom.
Oh, that's so sweet, Chris. That's really deeply, very like touching. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, I didn't mean it. Just trying to sound nice. No, of course I meant it. Tom, I love you to death. Please tell me when I can play something that you sent me that you asked me not to play last night without getting thrown in jail, because the second I can, I will. I'm desperate to play Lose You again to the Great British Public. I can't wait to play Me and My Friends again. Please come on the show and play all these songs, play the whole album. I don't care.
Oh, I'd love to.
Whenever you want to do it, you can.
Yeah, I'd love to. Maybe are we allowed to in May or June? Can I come in the studio and play?
The second you can do it, i.e. Yeah. The second you are allowed to do it, just come and do it. That's it. We'll find out when that is. And you, all right, Tom. Have a fantastic Friday. Well done. Lots of love to all your fans. Check out the video for what we're going to play now on the radio. See you later.
Thank you, Chris.
Bye bye. You're very
big
welcome.
Love to you. Bye bye.
Lots of love. Tom O'Dell and Monster. But you got to check out the video. Check out the video now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
It's such a major. It gets its own TV channel. Sky Sports Masters is already on air live from Augusta, Georgia, where they dye the lakes just the right shade of blue and the best golfers in the world vie for a mint green jacket. So please welcome the big booming drive straight down the middle of Sky Sports coverage. It's Nick Doherty.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Very well. Now, Nick, we've never talked about this on the air before, but I think this is the time, all right? The golf courses have never been busier. I've never been more tempted to swing a club in anger or peacetime. But the last time you and I played golf together, you won £50,000 and I won a tin tray. How did that happen? How's that fair? And we were on the same team.
Well, and to be fair, you did all the work, right?
I know.
I didn't want to say that.
And have you won anything since?
No, actually. I was thinking about it. Masters is always a fun week. I get super excited about it. But my best moment on the golf course was probably you bring the old course to its knees. Oh. It was just a sight to behold. And the champagne after, you talking about not being able to have a drink anymore. Yep. You made up for it that night.
Yeah, winners are grinners, aren't they, Nick? Winners are grinners.
Yeah,
we started with a cold glass of fizz on the 18th fairway at St Andrews, and 90 minutes later we were in our favourite pub in Ascot drinking pints of lager and lime. That's how you celebrate a win. Right, is it true? Let's talk about some of these potential myths or truths about Augusta, Nick, if you don't mind. Do they really dye the lakes a certain shade of blue? Do they really paint the grass green? You know, to what extent do they go to make this the golfing nirvana the world then beholds?
There is nothing that they won't do to present the greatest show on grass every year. They do mess about with colours. That's not unusual. We see that at quite a lot at different golf courses as well, especially at this sort of level. But the fact is, obviously, azaleas don't bloom for all that long. And if they somehow don't get the conditions for them to bloom correctly, they will go and take azaleas from somewhere where they are blooming correctly, bring them in and replant them for the week there. So they'll just move what they have to make it look the magical place that we get used to looking forward to every beginning of April each and every year, Chris. So I get super excited about it. It looks mega, doesn't it, on the TV? And it's one of those places when you actually get to go there, it more than lives up to its hype and reputation. It is something else.
Can't argue with anything you're saying there. And what do you think the atmosphere is going to be like from the golfers' point of view? Because they are as grateful as anybody else to be back doing what they do for a living. I know that that's already started. But, you know, because Augusta is such a special occasion anyway, do you think we'll see greater bonhomie than we've ever seen before?
That energy and the roars that we're used to hearing, they will be there for us to enjoy. And it adds to the viewing experience at home as well. The echoey roars amongst those loblolly pines at Augusta is something else. It's a bit different to anywhere else. And I think golfers are grateful that they have been able to continue with their careers, make their livings. The golf has really had a light shone on it, I suppose, not just for what it does, but for the mental health benefits and going down to our level and amateur golf as well. So golf is booming at the moment. And of course, for us at home as spectators who like to watch the best in the game play, it's been a great time because when we've been stuck indoors a lot more recently, we've had something to watch over Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Have you seen the car parks of the local golf clubs, especially around where you live, because you're in the thick of the Golden Triangle?
Yeah, it's chocker, isn't it? It's absolutely mad busy. I'm glad it's like that, to be honest.
The coverage has already started. Sky Sports Masters, of course. You're not there. Was there ever a chance of you getting out there this year?
They were talking about it a while ago. It was just the nature of this problem for us with the travel is the safety, and obviously Sky wanting to have people there to give it the biggest amount of clout they can to any tournament we do. But it's got to be reasonable to be able to do it, safe to do it, and obviously working with different governments and different bodies. So at the moment, we still have a great presence on the ground. We've got Cara from Golf Channel, who's working with us as well there. We've got Rich Beam and Paul McGinley, who are over there. And then we've got a lot of our team back here in the studio as well. Sarah will be there, I'll be there, Ewan Murray, Andrew Coulthard, Wayne Riley, all the usual crew. So, and we've got all our bells and whistles getting out as well. The VR stuff, which has gone down a treat, being able to look at a virtual reality golf swings of the best players in the game, moving around them in a 360-degree way. You know, we are throwing everything we have at this to make it the special event that it deserves to be, because there is only one Masters after all.
And any bets for us if you fancy the flutter this week? Anybody you fancy the look of?
So I picked Spieth a week ago before he's actually just won. Mm-hmm. After 1,351 days without a win, he just won last Sunday. So he's less of an outsider now, but I still fancy his chances, a former winner there as well. But my soft spot pick is Lee Westwood, 48 years old. I just think it's his turn, and he's shown some good signs recently. He's had a couple of second place finishes in massive events in the United States. We're all desperate for Lee to win a major championship, and what a perfect end to a 2021 Masters that would be.
Let's lump it on Lee, shall we?
Yeah.
Lump it on Lee, and then if he loses, Nick's paying for all the drinks next Monday.
Perfect.
Okay. I think I've got something just cropped up, actually, next Monday, guys.
Nick Doherty doing great business for Sky Sports, Sky Golf, Sky Sports Masters.
Yeah, the Masters starts this Thursday at 2 p.m. till Sunday the 11th of April, live and exclusive on Sky Sports, the Masters.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Our next guest has been smashing the music scene for 30 years with album after superb album. OK Human is out now, and a one-off live stream takes place next Saturday, complete with two Los Angeles orchestras. So please welcome a top geezer from Weezer. It's Brian Bell.
Morning, Brian. Hello. It's 22 minutes past 9 here in the UK. It's 22 minutes past 1 o'clock in the morning where you are.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness
me. Thank you so much for having me. Just one thing. Just for anyone that, like, it's like, wait a second. He wasn't in the band in 1992. I actually joined in 1994 for the recording of the first album. The band started in 92. That's all I want to say about that.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I knew that. I can only beg for forgiveness. That was my colleague, Vassos Alexander, who, when it comes to stats and facts, he's rubbish. And he's a sports reporter, right? And so he just guesses scores.
Yeah.
Like, so Scotland, you know, you've heard of Scotland, haven't you, Brian? Yeah, so...
I have. Yeah. I love Scotland.
So Scotland are in the World Cup, and they play against somebody a couple of weeks ago, and he says, oh, yeah, they lost. And in fact, they drew. So that was that.
That's great news for Scotland, I guess.
Well, it was better than news than Vassos originally announced. It's got to be said, yeah. What is the Weezer vibe like? Because I heard the album on the way in today, right? And I had to turn it off. Listen to this, Brian. I had to turn it off because it was getting me too excited for my show. How about that?
Oh, that's we can't ask for a better reaction than that.
Not from a 55-year-old, you can't.
I think the question sort of was, how's it right now, the vibe or whatever? The vibe has never been better. I feel, I guess, you know, closing in on nearly 30 years of this, closer to everyone than ever before, and everyone seems to be having more fun than they ever had. So it's just a great time in our band's history.
Isn't that interesting? But, you know, I said to Mira, who loves her music, our exec producer, I said, I'm trying to find an album track on the album. There isn't one. You know, they're just all, it's wall to wall, which is the Weezer way, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, we go out, we try to make a piece of work that's unified, and then we kind of listen to what we have, and then we say, is there a single on this album to help promote it? So we look at as All My Favorite Songs that's kicked off the record as the single, but we recently just shot a video for Grapes of Wrath that Amazon paid for because we mentioned audible.com in song. Oh, we mentioned Audible. I'm going to rock my Audible headphone rapes, Grapes of Wrath.
I know, I heard that. That jumped out at me, funny enough.
Yeah.
Grapes of Wrath, great song. Playing My Piano is funky. I like Playing My Piano because it sounds like Rivers was in lockdown and he actually went mad and recorded it. That's what it sounded like to me.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah. Then he gets very personal in the very beginning. You're like, whoa. TMI, perhaps.
Yeah.
But... you know, it's cool. It's Barry Rivers. No one else can usually get away with that stuff.
Yeah,
like he can.
The kids are downstairs. The wife's in the kitchen. I haven't washed my hair for 3 weeks, and I'm just playing my piano. Love it. Absolutely. Seriously, love it. Right, what's going on next week? Tell us about April 17, 6 p.m. our time. OK Human live stream. What's going on there?
OK, so there's an amazing venue in Los Angeles that was built by the architect Frank Gehry called Disney Hall.
Uh-huh.
And I guess Disney owns it. And but that's kind of where, you know, the Disney connection stops. But and it has one of the most incredible pipe organs you've ever seen inside of it that kind of looks like a Dr. Seuss's instrument or something. It's just really fascinating looking. And there's no right angles in the building at all. So the acoustics are about as perfect as they can be inside of a structure. And just being in that building and that incredible architecture was awe-inspiring for us and kind of a dream come true. And then we got to play during, you know, still lockdown sort of out here. No audience was allowed, but there was an orchestra and us and the songs of OK Human are played in its entirety. And then we added about 8 more songs of, you know, our catalog to play. I actually haven't heard the mix yet, so I'm just as eager to hear it as anyone else.
So, I mean, Weezer, you know, as we say, on the precipice of the 30th anniversary next year, has it always been a happy camp? You see, I know there have been band changes, and you went on a hiatus in the early noughties, but, you know, you seem like generally a very happy bunch of campers.
I'd be lying to say it's always been happy. There's been some darker moments. We had a bass player... he kind of had a mental breakdown and couldn't, you know, take the rigors of all the songs he hadn't learned. And so we had to replace him. And, you know, that wasn't so happy. We had another bass player quit on us early on. And then we had just finding replacements is not the funnest thing to do.
No.
Because I don't like the audition process because you have to, you know, turn people away and almost immediately you know if somebody's going to gel or not.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, you like didn't get the part just walking in the door, it has not, you know, it's so hard to fit into a group that's already existed, you know.
Yeah.
But luckily we have found that with our present bass player and we've been with him since 2001.
And is Rivers technically the boss or are you 50-50 with the band?
Well, I mean, technically, it's we are 25% of Weezer, but I mean, it really is and always has been Rivers' baby, and you know, you can't. He's like, this is great, let's do this. It's like, okay, but you know, we got to run this by Rivers, you know, like so. Yeah, sure. Well, you could call him the boss as well.
Okay, I'm only saying that because, you know, he's made you stay up till 1:30 in the morning to do the interviews, you know, with Europe. Where is he probably in bed now? Is that the kind of punches he gets to pull because he is the boss?
I said he was in bed about 4 hours ago.
4 hours ago. 4 hours ago. That's the Weezer frontman for you now. But he's gearing up for all the hardware, all the industry and the labor you're going to throw away, hopefully, this year. Brian,
hey,
thanks.
It's his loss. It's his loss. He, you know... You know, getting to talk to UK Breakfast Show, that's an honour.
Well, it's an honour and a pleasure. Brian, you're our new favourite, Brian. Okay, Brian Bell, clues in the name.
Glad to hear it.
Brian gave us a bell, live from over the pond. You're awesome. Brian, great to talk to you, pal. Give our love to Southern California and that blue, blue sky. Got a bit of our own this morning. And hope to see you soon. Come on, if you're over here, come and play live on our show. We have live bands on the show and we love live music here. Thank you so much.
Oh, we definitely will. All right. Thank you. Goodbye.
Beautiful. Goodbye, Brian. Goodbye and good night, my friend. And thank you for joining us.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.